Tarlehurst End podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlehurst End podcast extra in association with The Working and Paper for today, May the 4th. My name is Ollie Allen, your host for today's show. I'm delighted to be joined once again, as ever this season, by The Working and Paper's Tom Crocker. Morning, Tom. How's it going?
Morning, Ollie. Not too bad, thank you. I think we're just all looking forward to the season coming to an end on Sunday.
Yeah, nearly a week on from last weekend, I'm still trying to figure out how it went so badly wrong against Ipswich.
Yeah, it was certainly one of the worst shows of the season towards the end there at Medeski. It's been a tough season there, and just a fitting way to round off at the home campaign, I suppose.
Absolutely, and we must take a brief look back at that 4-0 defeat, unfortunately, and because the way Reading sort of absolutely capitulated cannot go undiscussed at all. And as you mentioned, all four goals came from the 71st minute onwards, and all came sort of really, really bad defending from Reading, really. The first one from Martin Waghorn, he's in absolutely acres of space to smash home, as about three or four defenders sort of look on blankly and tried to claim offside. The second goal from Jordan Spence goes through Vito Mernes' legs after Liam Moore sort of failed to close him down and allow him to shoot from an angle he really shouldn't be scoring from. As we went into stoppage time, a Reading corner is cleared and Chris Gunter plays a timid header back to Vito Mernes, sort of hesitates a little before attempting to hoof the ball clear, but smashes it straight into Freddie Sears, who's then comically sort of given an open goal to score into. And then straight from the restart after that third goal, Tommy Elphick gives the ball away so sloppily, and Ipswich play their way in before Callum Connolly scores. And admittedly, Reading probably should have had one themselves before Ipswich's first goal, really, but Bartosz Bielakowski made a stunning save to deny John Swift. But having gone through all four of those goals just then, Tom, the most frustrating thing is that all of them really were just so preventable, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It was awful defending. I think, strangely, until that point, it certainly wasn't the worst performance they've put in at home this season. It was an even game. It looked like they could sort of nick it 1-0 again and everyone goes home relatively happy. But yeah, as they say, that first goal was just, I'm still not sure what they're doing, just standing around looking. It might have been offside. I haven't really seen the angle to look at that. It looked like he might have been, but they just left him with so much space in the 6-yard box, and he turns around and finishes it well. And the second one is possibly just as bad. Spence gets in down the right and nobody goes across to close him down, and it goes through the legs of Manone at the near post. And after that, yeah, there was never really any sign of getting back into it. Obviously, you mentioned that the Swift chance, really, and that was the one which about a minute or two before they took the lead, and that obviously proved to be a big turning point. I think also Bodvarsson missed the best chance in the first half to miss the ball in front of goal somehow, and those were the two best chances for either team really in the whole game. And as soon as that went down to 2-0, there was never really, they threw on two strikers, Martin and Smith came on, but never really looked like scoring. And yeah, the third goal was it's unbelievable. It's sort of something happened similar against Burton. Someone smashed it into someone and it went in, I think, so it's not totally unbelievable. But yeah, the way they dealt with that, and then the fourth one, I didn't even see her looking up and he was running into the box. So it's happened all so quickly those last 20 minutes. And yeah, in fairness, Paul Clement came out and slammed the team. It was quite surprising, actually. I thought he might come out and say it was a sort of an even game until that point, but he wasn't keen to focus on any sort of positive like that. He was just not happy at all with the team and called them out. And it's down to them to, I suppose, you do that to hopefully get a response out of them this week. So you can't do that all the time, but I think when you lose 4-0 at home, it's certainly justified. And yeah, the way they just fell apart in those last 20 minutes, it's like you said, it was embarrassing, really. They came back out for the sort of lap of appreciation. I think there was more stewards than fans by that point. It was nobody wanted to hang around, really, and you can't blame too many of them, I don't think.
You know, I stay for the lap of appreciation just because I usually do anyway, I'd probably say there's probably no more than 500 fans there at very maximum. But sitting watching the team just sort of fall apart so easily, you know, seemingly with sort of no determination, no energy, it made me so angry just how gutless they were and sort of how little they seemed to care. It was just pure disbelief. What was the reaction in the press box like? Was there sort of everyone sort of looking around like sort of what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, well, like I said, I think we all missed the last goal because it was all writing up what we're doing, and it's 3-0, it's all over. And I think obviously it's at 2-0, there's still a little hope that maybe if you can get a goal they get back in it. But so as soon as that stupid third goal went in, it's just a case of looking around all the other results, really. I think that was the main thing to check if they'd fallen down the league at all, and because obviously it was a game that if they'd won they would guarantee safety. So that was the thoughts going into it. And yeah, like I say, for those first 70 minutes it was looking pretty tight. It looked like it was to be one goal to settle it. And yeah, I think it was just disbelief from all sides, from Ipswich side as well as the Reading side, really, that yeah, you don't tend to see a team at this level just completely fall apart and just give the ball away and sort of look like they're giving up defending. I'm sure they're not just completely giving up, but that's how it comes across on the pitch when you watch it, and they're not tracking runners, they're not trying to defend properly, and yeah, they end up losing 4-0 at home, and the players have got to take a lot of responsibility for that. Obviously, Paul Clement set them up well enough for 70 minutes, so I don't think you can take too much blame for some of the individual errors towards the end there. It's just, obviously, if it finishes 2-0, which it could have done quite easily, just 2-0 without those goals and stoppage time, you look at it as just another one of those home defeats. But when it turns into 4-0, you've got to start asking some questions, I think, because it's unacceptable, some of that defending towards the end.
I was going to ask about Paul Clement, actually. Obviously, he was understandably angry after the game, as you mentioned, but how much of the blame do you think he sort of does take for this? I mean, this is the third time now we've lost by at least three goals in his reign. Obviously, 3-0 at Aston Villa and 3-0 at Sheffield Wednesday. Is this down to him, or is this just sort of a group of players that sort of just lacks any form of backbone really at all?
Yeah, I think it's his first defeat at home, isn't it? So that's something to look at. Obviously, the Sunderland game as well, we didn't win that one. But yeah, it was a question that was going around actually before the game, whether the team have improved at all since he's come in. Compared to what Yap was doing, obviously the general consensus was that Reading would just about have enough to stay up if Yap had stayed in charge anyway, even though they were sort of sliding down, and it seems like they're going to just about stay up anyway. So it's going to be interesting. I think the first few months next season are going to be key, because it's going to be his own team really, and his own ideas, and then you can judge him a bit more, because he's quite keen to point out that it's far too early to judge whether this is his style or whatever. He's just got the hand he's dealt with, and essentially he's coming to save the team from relegation, and if he does that then it's job done. But yeah, like you say, three heavy defeats, two on the spin now as well, seven goals conceded, none scored. And I think when he first came in, the focus was on improving that defence, and obviously you got a couple of home 1-0 wins, and like that had sort of been sorted a little bit. They were structured at the back, and but some of the goals they've conceded recently, it's just maybe it is more down to individual errors really. They're just giving the ball away, and yeah, it just looks so easy to score against, which is certainly not what you want at this point when you're in a relegation battle. And you have to wonder whether some of the players are already for the relegation battle, whether they feel they're even in one still. They haven't sort of dropped into the relegation zone at all this season, and it seems like some of them are just presuming they're going to be okay, which it looks like they might be, but they're playing a very risky game really. And yeah, I think we'll know a bit more early next season quite how much Clement's had an influence on the team.
I mean, certainly with the nature of the defeat, there was some sort of discussion about whether the change, sacking Yap's down and bringing Paul Clement in, was sort of the right one to make. And for me, I think you have to look at the way the Yapstam's reign ended. Obviously, one win in 18 games, I think it was. So the change was certainly justified. And would we have got the 1-0 wins over QPR and Preston if Yapstam was still in charge? I'm not too sure. I think Paul Clement certainly gave them that initial boost, at least. Tom, from your point of view, do you think sort of the change has been proved right, or do you think we would be in the same position with Stam still in charge?
Essentially, if they stay up, then it's job done, and it's been justified, really. I think, like I say, my personal opinion was that they would have found enough to stay up with Stam in charge, but you can't argue the fact that they weren't getting hardly any points when Yap left. Like I say, one win in 18, and you can't really have too many complaints about that. But yeah, I think they would have just about had enough anyway. You'll see that it's funny, that first game QPR game, obviously the penalty in the last minute Vito saved. If he doesn't save that, then we're looking at a very different situation this weekend. So yeah, they got that little bit of luck in those first couple of games. Obviously the 1-0s, they were on the back foot for a long, long period of those games as well, but they managed to grind out, and perhaps that's what any new manager can do. They're just a bit of different ideas, a bit of motivation. Obviously Clement's done the same job last year, so he can find a way to get out of these players. But yeah, I think they would have managed to do it under Yap, but I don't think anyone can really complain if they stay up now. Then Paul Clement's done his job for this season, I think.
Certainly. I mean, if you want more of an in-depth discussion on the Ipswich game, please do go back and listen to the main show that came out earlier in the week with Mark and Dave Handbags Harris. It's basically one big lambasting of the squad, which is pretty much exactly what they deserve after that performance. But the defeat did, of course, mean that Reading's championship status is still not secured. It will go down to the final day, and we'll preview that in just a minute. But before the game on Saturday, it was announced that Liam Moore is 2017-18's Player of the Season, with Mo Barrow in second and Liam Kelly in third. The right decision for you, Tom?
Yeah, I think obviously he was better last season. I think everyone was, but yeah, I think he's been one of those that, in the last few months at least, has certainly come into his own. I think he struggled a bit for form around Christmas time and January, and yeah, I think he's certainly stepped up since then. Obviously, he's had to keep changing his centre-back partner throughout the season, which probably hasn't really helped him, but Yeah, I think he's obviously a key man for Reading, and like I say, it's clearly he's a fan's favourite. I think most people probably presumed Mo Barrow might win it, or I think in Sim's column the other week he had Barrow and Bodvarsson as the top two, so it's just come out as a little bit of a surprise to some people, I think. But yeah, I think it was tough to pick out anyone, to be perfectly honest, this season. There's been no real stand-up player. I think Liam Moore's played every minute in the Championship, which probably helps him as well. He's relatively consistent, is, you know, what you're going to get from him, and he's someone who's Reading really needs to try and keep hold of. I think if they are going to get any better next season, obviously he tends to get a lot of interest from elsewhere, but you hope that this season they can keep hold of him again and try and build that defence around him, because I think he's a key man for Reading, and yeah, he deserves some sort of recognition, I think, so it's a just reward for him.
I mean, I think considering the season we have, I'm not overly bothered about who it's gone to. I think I would probably give it to Mo Barrow personally, and probably John Daly Bodvarsson, who can maybe feel a little bit hard done by not to make the top three. Perhaps I'm not entirely sure why Liam Kelly's in that top three, but yeah, so I'd probably give it to Mo Barrow personally. I think in terms of Liam Moore, he's probably one of the best players since Paul Clements arrived at the club. I think he won five out of five Man of the Match awards in the Tyler Sten vote for Paul Clements' first five games at the club, and he's obviously a very nice guy off the pitch as well. But in terms of season overall, I'd probably say without Mo Barrow's goal, we might well be already relegated, and certainly he's been the most dangerous player going forward this season, always looking the most likely player to sort of give Reading that spark. And for a player that sort of didn't get the best reviews, the likes of Swansea and Leeds, Tom, he's had a pretty good impact in Berkshire, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think I would have given it to Mo as well. I think he's had a really good season. Obviously, he can be a bit inconsistent at times, but he's the one player in that team, I think, you look at and you want him to have the ball and running at the defence. He's the sort of person that, if Reading are going to score, it's likely going to come through him. Also, I think he's top scorer or joint top scorer, and creates loads of chances as well. I say he can be frustrating to watch sometimes, but yeah, I think I would have plumped for him, and he's been one of the success stories in terms of the signings, I think, in the last season or two. I say him and Liam Moore both come in the last couple of years, and I think they're like I say, the top two in the vote. So some of the recruitment has been quite good, and I think he's someone who is relishing playing week in, week out, and like you say, he didn't have best reviews down at Leeds as well, didn't do great, so it's good to see him come in and do well. And obviously Liam's picked up the trophy, but like you say, I think it's, as tends to happen with these sort of awards, the last few weeks tend to cloud people's minds sometimes, and that's possibly, like you say, he's stepped up in the last few weeks and probably got a few more votes because of that. But yeah, I think him and Mo are fair enough as a top two. I don't think anyone will have massive complaints about that. Like you say, it's not perhaps too fussed who it went to this year, but Liam and Mo, I think, have had good seasons and need more of them next season, really.
I mean, obviously it's the first time since 2014 that a goalkeeper hasn't won it after Federici won it, and then now Habsi won it twice. And I think the last non-goalkeeper to win it was Jordan Abita. But hopefully Mo Barrow may be able to come up with one final goal or two as Reading travel to Cardiff on Sunday lunchtime for the final game of the season, looking to secure their Championship status. But it's fair to say, if you could pick a side to play to sort of get a win or a point to secure your Championship status, Cardiff would probably be right on the bottom of the list, considering that they still needed a win to confirm automatic promotion.
Yeah, exactly. It's the one thing you could say, that there might be some nerves around if Reading can keep it tight for a while and Fulham take the lead or something like that, then you never know. But Cardiff have been flying all season. They've been up there all the season. I think they deserve to go up, really. So it's going to be a massively tough ask for Reading. But as I say, they have form a little bit for turning up when you really don't expect them to. And I think that if they can't respond after losing 4-0 at home, then some even more serious questions have to be asked, really. So obviously it's live on TV as well for everyone to see it, just how good they are. So we'll see if they can respond to that. But yeah, they're not safe yet, and they need to get a point to make sure. Otherwise, they're looking around and hoping on everyone else. So that will at least focus some minds, you would hope. But yeah, like you say, Cardiff, they've been so effective this year, and they find a way to win these games, and you would expect them to win again on Sunday, but you never know.
And of course, it isn't all over if Reading do lose. As for us to go down, Birmingham would need to at least draw with Fulham, who obviously the other team competing with Cardiff for that automatic promotion spot, whilst Barnsley need to beat Derby, and Burton need to beat Preston, and Derby and Preston themselves are competing against each other for the final playoff place. that doesn't, of course, guarantee Reading safety, but it is certainly relieving that sort of the teams around us are also facing sides with something to play for rather than sort of mid-table clubs who might be on the beach.
Yeah, like Ipswich last week, maybe. But yeah, it's the fixture computer's certainly thrown up some good ones this week. Like you say, all the teams at the bottom are playing teams that need to get something themselves. So it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be, I think, a nervy day at quite a few of those games. That both the teams are going to need to get the win. So
yeah,
it wouldn't even surprise me if maybe two of them got dugout wins. But I can't see all three of the teams going above Reading this weekend. Obviously, it's famous last words, but I just can't. I personally think Fulham will beat Birmingham, which will make all the rest of it irrelevant anyway. But I think you look at Burton there, like I say, they're on a great run at the moment, so you could see them maybe getting something. But Barnsley going to Derby, you have to think Derby will get over the line at some point in one of these seasons. So yeah, that's going to be massively tough for them. I think Bolton playing Forest at home, so they may well win that one. But I think it's 16 goals or something, so that shouldn't be an issue. But yeah,
it would certainly be a good turnaround from Burton. So I think I remember sitting on this show about a month ago saying, and we both said that we both thought that Burton was sort of dead and buried. Now they're needing a win to survive. So anything really can happen.
They've picked up the win. I think they were sort of level with Sunderland at that point, and then they beat Sunderland a couple of weeks ago. Now they're the team that are in form, and they'll probably fancy their chances of staying up now, which is, like you say, it's remarkable. Really, they've done it a couple of years in a row, and fair play to them if they dig themselves out of this. I think they've certainly so show some more fight than some of the Reading players have. They're getting the best out of that squad, so yeah, it wouldn't begrudge seeing them staying up at all. But in terms of the other games, I say you would presume Reading would maybe lose, and you can't really see Birmingham beating Fulham with Fulham in such good form either. So it looks like Reading are just about going to fall over the line. But if they do somehow end up in the bottom three, I don't think anyone can have too many complaints really. I think the points tally has been enough to get relegated in most of the recent seasons, so they've been poor all season, but they just need one last push on Sunday and hopefully just about get over the line somehow.
In terms of Reading's team for this one then, are we expecting Paul Cameron to sort of ring the changes for the trip to South Wales? And I know some fans have sort of been calling for some of the youngsters to be given a shot, but that's probably not in the pipeline, is it?
That doesn't sound like it. I think Clement said on Monday when he was thinking about it, he was going to play the whole under-23s team. So he was certainly not happy after last week. But like you said, obviously the days go by, you think maybe sort of seven or eight changes, then you eventually whittle it down to one or two. So I think it's going to be more one or two than sort of nine or ten, something like that. Obviously they've lost Omar Richards, is out with his ankle injury, so they're going to have to fill that void. Obviously Blackett's still suspended, so you'd presume Gunter will go over to left back maybe, but we've got Bakuna back from his ban as well, so yeah, you guess maybe he'll come back in. But in terms of the others, Paul McShane and Callum Harriott are supposedly in the reckoning, which is it's a bit of a surprise really for the last game. To obviously Harriott hasn't played for well over a year, so for him to I think Clement's trying to think on that, whether to throw him into the squad or not. But like we said, he can't really do too much worse than some of the other ones. So maybe if he is fit enough to be involved, then I think he's certainly someone who can have an impact. It's going to be interesting, because I think the main focus is to try and make sure they're more solid defensively this week. But they're well aware that Cardiff are going to be quite happy to let Reading have the ball. So it's going to be down to them to try and create things as well. So it's going to be an interesting way they go about it. But yeah, so McShane and Harriott fit again, Bakuna's back, and Omar Richards is out, and then aside from that, it's just down to selection really. You'd imagine maybe Vandenberg or Edwards, someone else come in to try and shore up the midfield. But I think I don't think it's going to be massive changes.
I mean, the defence sort of right came in for a lot of criticism last weekend, so you perhaps would expect rotation there, as you mentioned. Tyler Blackett suspended and Omar Richards is injured, so you'd probably expect to see Chris Gunter at left back, and then maybe Bakuna at right back, although Thiago Alori did play at right back last weekend after Richards went off injured in the centre. Tommy Elphick, of course, made his return last weekend but did make that error for the fourth goal. Do you think we could see Paul McShane go straight in? I mean, there's certainly plenty for Paul Clement to decide about that back line.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. It depends entirely on whether he's convinced they're going to be fit enough to come in. And obviously Tommy Elphick came in and looked a little rusty, I think, and it's difficult for a centre-back. But Paul Clement was also keen to point out that it's not just down to the centre-backs how you defend. It's down to the midfield as well. I think when the team came in on Saturday, it was looking at Swift and Kelly centre midfield on their own, and if they would have enough to cope, and I don't think they really did towards the end. It was sort of got overrun there, played with two strikers, and I don't think there'll be two strikers on Sunday. It'll probably be more of a, I imagine Jan will probably drop out and bring someone else into the midfield probably, so I think they'll try and protect the back four a little bit more, and yeah, like you say, Laurie at right back could be a good answer to that, and then Bakuna in midfield maybe, that'll probably be the way he's maybe thinking, and then maybe put Elphick in and have McShane on the bench possibly. But yeah, like I said, there's plenty of questions and there's no perfect answer really. You've just got to try and find a way to keep Cardiff quiet, I think, and try and get the crowd quiet as well, because it's going to be a sellout and it's probably going to be a party there.
Yeah, no, I was going to mention the strike force as well. So as you mentioned, we saw both Bodvoss and Kermigan start last weekend with Sam Smith and Chris Martin on the bench. Do you think all four of those could be involved in the squad again? I think personally, from my point of view, I wouldn't have Chris Martin in the 18, considering that he's probably not going to be here next season. What about for you?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting call. I think it's, I don't think Jan will probably start. I think he was playing just off Bodvarsson last week, and I think he came in for Vandenberg, and I think he could just switch that back again and have one up front. And if you're going to do that, you'd imagine it's probably going to be Bodvarsson or Smith to run around up front, but I don't know, it wouldn't surprise me if he did just throw Chris Martin in there and start him, because I don't think the other two have really done enough recently to warrant a start, and it's a position that they're, none of them are in great form, so I don't think anyone can really say they thoroughly deserve to be starting there. And
no.
I personally would like to see Sam Smith given a go. I don't think he can do much less than some of the other guys. Obviously he's in decent form for the 23s and he'd be well up for it, so yeah, it'd be interesting to see which way he goes. But I think Bodvarsson will certainly be involved either from the bench or from the start, and Jan will probably be involved for the fact that he can come on and have an impact. So yeah, whether one of them drops out or not, I'm not too sure, because obviously if you've got Harriet and McShane coming back in, someone's got to drop out. So
yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see which way he goes. But if you're only starting one striker, I suppose you don't really need three on the bench.
And obviously Kermigan obviously got the late winner at Cardiff last season, so if he can pop up with something similar again, that would be much appreciated. In terms of how the game will pan out then, it's a strange one. It's because Reading could quite conceivably sort of perform really poorly and get beaten quite handsomely, but yet still be celebrating sort of survival at full time. And could they put in one surprisingly good performance, Tom, as a reaction to last weekend's defeat, just like we sort of ruined Derby's playoff hopes 3 years ago? Or does this team not quite have that sort of performance in them, and Cardiff will perhaps be too strong, considering they'll be desperate for the win themselves as well?
I think they do have it in them. They say they've shown this season that they can trouble these better teams, but I think there will be a reaction initially. I think especially the first sort of 20 minutes, I think they'll be keen to show right the wrongs from last week and the week before. Really, I think that'll be the main thing. I don't think it'll be another sort of heavy loss. I think they could end up getting beaten, but if they put in a decent show and can just, like say, fall over the line, then I think everyone will take that and go into the summer and just try and build again for next year. But yeah, I think they do have it in them. Obviously those two home defeats that they ground out recently shows that they can defend properly, and that'll be the main focus to actually keep the, well, they did for 70 minutes really on Saturday. It's just I think if they capitulate the same way again, that they won't want to be encountering Paul Clement anytime soon. So I think that'll be well in their minds. I think they've been let know this week quite how bad it was, and yeah, I think that'll be a game that sticks in their memory for a long time, so they certainly won't want anything like that again. And yeah, I expect them to go there and put in a decent performance, but come up just short on the day. That's how I think it'll go, and I think the other results will pan out just about in their favour, and they'll somehow survive.
Prediction-wise, I can tell you, you've unfortunately lost your lead at the top of the prediction league, and are 1 point behind Westie, so you do need to better him this weekend. I can tell you that he's gone for a 3-0 win to Cardiff. So how do you see this one panning out for the all-important result?
Yes, I've been clinging on to top spot there somehow, despite getting loads of scores wrong. But I was going to go for 2-0 to Cardiff, and obviously if Westie's gone for something different, that's perfect. So I think I'll stick with 2-0 to Cardiff this weekend.
Yeah, so I think it's 3 points for a correct result. So if you get that 2-0 win, I think that means that you will take the prediction.
Bang on.
We will find out next week. I'm also going to probably say 2-0. I think I've always been confident of staying up purely because of the teams below us. I mean that isn't a great thing to say, but I think 43 points would have had Reading relegated in sort of any other season. We've been very lucky this year indeed. And We'll know by about 3 p.m. on Sunday afternoon whether Reading will be playing Championship football next season. But one thing's for sure, Tom, and that is that it'll be great to finally see the back of this torrid campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been forgettable from that very first game when they had six subs and got a red card at QPR, and it's not really got much better throughout. There were a few sort of high points, but yeah, I think everyone just wants to get this done, survive, and then, like we've seen with Cardiff, anything can happen the following season. They were the right down there last year, so
getting near Warwick.
Yeah, well, if he goes up, I think he's going to be a wanted man, maybe. So, yeah, he's done a brilliant job there, and hopefully Paul Clement can do something similar if he can just keep Reading up this year.
Absolutely. Wrapping up this week's show then, what can we look forward to on the working in paper in the next few days?
Yes, we spoke with Paul Clement and John Daly Bodvarsson yesterday, so something up from them, and also Simeon's column on how Reading can go about trying to spoil that party on Sunday, and saying that last weekend's defeat was one of the worst in Mid-AC Stadium history. So yeah, it's a good column from him this week. That'll be going up on Wokeham.today, and I'll put it up on Twitter at Tom J. Crocker as well.
Fantastic stuff. Yeah, I think we forgot to mention, I think it was the worst home defeat for Reading at Mid-AC for 12 years since Arsenal in the Premier League. So certainly not good reading at all. Fantastic stuff then. Myself and Tom will be hopefully back early next week for our final podcast extra of the season, where we'll look back on Reading, hopefully securing survival at Cardiff, and then take a brief look ahead to the summer in terms of transfers, etc. The main show will then have its finale later on in the week. They'll be recording live on Thursday the 10th of May at 8 p.m. at the Spread Eagle pub in Tarlest, if you want to pop down for that. Also look out for a special podcast on the women's team at some point next week too with Mark. So that's three podcasts to look out for next week. We're spoiling you as it comes towards the end of the season. But until then, all is left for me to do is thank Tom for joining me as ever this week.
Awesome. Thanks, Ollie.
And thank you at home for listening as well. Fingers crossed we can crawl over the line this weekend. Come on, you Ars.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.